You're listening to the Fooled by the Root podcast.
This is your host, Heidi Marvel. I'm so glad you're here to listen to this unique episode with author adoptee Kevin Barhite. After reading his book, Dear Stephen Michael's Mother, and watching his twins' videos on YouTube, which show Kevin dialoguing with himself as a man and a child, I was inspired to reach out to him with an idea. I asked Kevin if he would consider replicating the adult child format on his YouTube videos for our podcast. We talked about it and we decided that we would work on three themes: loneliness, shame, and forgiveness. What you are about to hear is a planning session that Kevin recorded, and I didn't know it was being recorded, even though the bright light was right in front of my face. Thank goodness he did, because we would have never been able to recreate what happened. When Kevin revealed at the end of our conversation that he recorded, I was absolutely overjoyed. During this, quote, unintended episode, Kevin presented his view as a child and an adult. And even though he has a theatrical background, what he expressed was certainly not an act. A little bit more about Kevin's background. He was abandoned by his mother at birth and enveloped in a labyrinth of adoption, addiction, and child sexual abuse. By age 20, he was a shell of a boy. He succumbed completely to a suicidal lifestyle of drug dealing and prostitution. At 45, after many years of recovery, Kevin began a painful journey to uncover his origins. And as Anne Heffron, author of You Don't Look Adopted, said so eloquently on the back of his book, you read Kevin's book for the story of a life lived beyond what seems survivable. You read it to learn that anything is possible, that the human spirit is as remarkable as some people say it is, more than remarkable, miraculous. I would agree with Anne completely. Kevin's life is a miracle. Please note that we do discuss some very difficult and sensitive issues in this episode. I hope it is as much a gift to you as it was to me. Enjoy.
We're going live on three, right. Two, one. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, Kevin. I would like to talk to both little and big Kevin about loneliness, the loneliness in adoption.
This is kind of like the stuff I did in the twins videos, right?
Yeah, exactly. So big Kevin, can you tell me, as a man sitting here before me, what does that loneliness look like for you today?
You know, a lot of what I did when I was doing the original YouTube videos was I used something called visualization. And that's really a spiritual, mental, emotional, and intellectual too, just revisiting. So today what we're going to do, I guess, and what you're asking me to think of is, yeah, right now it's me. This is Kevin, right? The booming voice. But I'm going to take a few minutes if you'd like. We'll go and talk to little Kevin too. I think the loneliness is something that I didn't think I could ever be free of that. I thought it was a part of what everyone felt. I didn't know that it was possible to have that kind of change in my life where I could maybe feel less lonely. I think as an adult, even in my years of recovery from addiction and alcoholism, I found company, I found companionship, but there was still a sense of apart. And I think that's another word for feeling like you're just all alone. And I think like a lot of people, I struggled with other things. I struggled with multiple traumas. But once I found my way to what we all know of as the primal wound, the understanding of loneliness started to make sense to me. It started to, I guess, bubble up in first intellectually, because that's where I kind of live, like a lot of us. But from the intellectual, it came down to the heart. And I started to have the emotional sense of loneliness. And that was devastating, because intellectually I thought, oh, I can figure this out. But emotionally, I thought, oh, I'm broken and I'm done. I'm gone, because I was abandoned and I was left and I'm not wanted. And that's where these feelings of apartness come from. And they're unfixable. Now, I had to really then take it to another level of physical, realizing that the umbilical cord had been broken. I had been left. I had been relinquished and separated from my biological origins, and everything was gone. Now, there's the intellectual, the emotional, there's the physical, and there's also the spiritual. And I think sometimes we talk about spiritual and people get, you know, kind of lost in the weeds on that. But just even think of it as heritage. I didn't know where I came from. I didn't know anything about why I existed, what I was doing here. What was the thoughts in my mother's head when I was born, when I was conceived, when she was carrying me? What were her thoughts now, if she was still alive? What were the thoughts of maybe other extended family I have? Grappling with that, and as you know, Heidi, I've you know, done a search, and I've had some changes in my life through that search and learning more about myself. But the real journey, I think, was not in finding and really even understanding where my origins were. It was even accepting the fact that I had a right to know, that I had an intellectual, emotional, physical, and spiritual duty to myself. I needed to be there. I needed to be in that place, no matter how much it hurt. And every day it hurt. Every day it hurt to feel lonely, and every day it hurt to be apart. And accepting that and starting to grapple with that and think about it and feel it and just embody it, and then spiritually realize I just felt like I was afloat, lost at sea, that hurt. But that was the journey that was worth going on, because through that pain, through that loneliness, and through that understanding of that's how I felt, I started to understand that I wasn't alone. I really wasn't, was I?
So beautifully said, Kevin, you know, coming from a grown man who's taken the journey. So what would little Kevin say, who has not taken the journey, who is in the thick of the feelings of isolation and other, feeling other?
I guess it would be something different, huh? Kind of like, I guess it would be kind of like I'm alone, but I can read, right? I can spend time with myself. I used to like the Hardy Boys a lot. I'd read the Hardy Boys all the time. And it was exciting when my mom, my adoptive mom, she would come home with a book. That would be great. And I'd read till like 2 or 3 in the morning. And you know what I love more? I love when I got 2 books. She would come home with 2 books. And I just read all night, because then I didn't feel so, I guess, alone. And even when I was playing music really loud and putting the headphones on and jamming with America, I was really young then, and reading the books, smoking pot, doing all the different things that I did to kind of try to fill that loneliness, I guess I felt it wasn't working. Sometimes it worked, you know, sometimes it did. Sometimes I felt like I was a part of it, like I was a part of the book. And I would just live with the Hardy Boys. It was like I was their brother or something. And then when I was doing the music or something like that, that was really cool, because I'd put my headphones on, because my parents would always yell at me if I didn't. It was too loud, because I cranked it up so loud that it was at the top of the volume. And I'd sing at the top of my lungs, pretending I was playing air guitar, but I was never alone when I was singing. I was on a stage, and there was like 50,000 people watching me. And I was a part of something, right? I was a part of something, huh? So the loneliness wasn't something that I really wanted, but I found a way. I found a way to suffer in loneliness and still feel like I had something to give. Like my singing out loud with my headphones on, nobody could hear me but me, but I could pretend, right? I could pretend. I didn't know that the loneliness was part of me not knowing who my mom was, or I didn't know it was a part of me not knowing if I had brothers or sisters, because I was an only child growing up. But it was a real emptiness, you know? You might know that. I don't, I don't have a way out of that. I just knew that I felt like if I had to feel that way all the time, I was gonna die. And so I put my headphones on and I sang really loud.
Kevin.
It's okay. I know.
I won't do this during. I promise it.
Heidi, this is during.
Holy shit.
We're doing this right now. This is during.
Yeah, this is during, and this is.
It's okay.
This is why I wanted you to do this, because that is like, I don't know, for lack of a better word, just wow.
Heidi, keep.
You know,
going.
That's just kind of the strike, and I think, you know, the other thing I'd like to talk to Big Kevin about too is shame. There's a lot of shame when you're adopted. You feel like you shouldn't exist. You feel ashamed of the ways that you cope that might not be healthy, because goodness knows adoptees are self-destructive. And
right.
That we push people away. And there's just so much shame in not feeling grateful and not... you know, there's just a huge, long laundry list of shame. And to me, that's one of the most debilitating emotions. And I wonder, Kevin, I'm just curious, like, how have you been able to grapple with shame? And where does that sit in your body and in your spirit and in your mind, like, today?
You made a statement, and I'm just going to find those words again. You know, as adoptees, we push people away. Boy, is that the understatement of the millennium.
Push pull.
Push pull, elbow, fight.
Yeah,
fight
we
me.
Want you, but nope. Come here, nope.
you're right, the word shame. Loneliness and shame, it builds on each other. And one finds itself in the other. I found shame in the loneliness, like being lonely while everyone else, the entire history of mankind seemed to have been able to grapple with their lives. And I was just apart from, what's wrong with me? Who am I? And that, of course, really lived in my body. And it's a good question, because you say, how does it live in your body? Oh my God, did I hate the skin that I was in? My gosh, did I crawl? And as an adult, you know, we are self-destructive, many of us, some of us more than others, and I was extremely self-destructive. The drugs and the alcohol, the abuse, the sexual abuse that compounded on that trauma, that all just took me down just roads that most of us don't ever want to know. And yet, when I looked at that and I got sober and I started to clean up my act and I started to heal from the trauma of the sexual abuse, none of that even held a candle to when I started to really understand the deep shame, the deeper sense of I'm of no value. I don't have worth. And as I started to read The Primal Wound, and as I started delving in and understanding that, again, the loneliness was still there, but I wasn't alone all of a sudden. I found some companionship in understanding other adoptees had the same experience. And yet I found in my own body, physically, it made it harder to even want to hug people, to touch people, much less look in the mirror. Because I felt like I was not wanted by my biological mother. I felt like I wasn't valued by the family that raised me. And I felt like I had treated myself so badly, so terribly badly, and been abused by others, that this all started to make sense in my own storyline of, Kevin, you shouldn't even be here. Not only is there a sense of shame, but that shame is so full and so all-encompassing that you just shouldn't have been here to begin with. And the struggle for me, and I don't think it's right or wrong to say we're all at different places in this, I think that we're all on a travel, has been difficult. And where I have found solace is in working with other people that are struggling. I find that my value and my worth and my sense of being able to snap that shame into is validated and grows in what we're doing right now. Sharing the pain, the hurt, the loneliness, the shame, the awful struggles that we've had with other people and growing together. As I've done that, I've started to realize in many ways that I don't want to justify the relinquishment as, oh boy, everyone should experience this so you can be strong and help other people. That's not what I'm saying. But I've been able to find worth in the healing, value in the struggle. And if the struggle and the healing have worth, that's my struggle. That's my healing. That means that that's my worth. That's my value. Now, over time, I've realized that there's just no way that I can be unrelinquished, can I? There's no way that I, as an adult, can say, I'm going to go back there, we're going to rewind everything, and I'm going to not have that happen. That happened. So acceptance has been a really big part of it. But that acceptance also had to come with some recognition that my life had been really broken. And that I had been dismantled in ways and twisted neurologically, we know, emotionally, intellectually, physically, and spiritually, in ways that I was going to have to, in some ways, live with. But the thing I didn't have to live with was the shame. The thing that I didn't have to hold on to was the shame. But you know, Heidi, with all the love in my heart, I have to say that shame was mine to put down. It wasn't mine to pick up to begin with. I didn't heap that on myself. The shame wasn't my responsibility. But now that I've understood what it is, and it took years and years and years to really grapple with it, there was a day when I put that shame down. Then, and only then, did I realize that it was my choice and my power to leave it or to pick it back up again. Those were the chains that were around my neck, and I had really allowed myself to understand I may have to carry those to my dying day. I may have to live with those the rest of my life. That was my level of acceptance. But when I finally, through the work and through the healing, was able to take that shame and just, I can't explain it really because it's my own journey, I was able to process that. And I was able to see that happen and that shame lay on the ground. I remember where I was. It was the steps of a therapist in Saratoga Springs. And I can see the sidewalk right there in front of me right now. And I dropped those chains just fell off of me. And I realized and I cried my eyes out. Those were mine to pick up now. And I don't want to pick those up anymore. I don't want to carry those anymore. I don't want to drag those around. And there are days when I really feel like I deserve them. Right? I don't always feel like I shouldn't have those chains of shame. But every day I grow stronger. Every day that I don't pick them up, I grow stronger and it becomes more possible for me to realize I'm not going to do that. I'm going to live without that shame. I'm going to live without those chains. That's my choice. That's my power. That's my, I guess, superpower these days.
That's a beautiful superpower. Such a beautiful journey you just took us on. And I wonder, where did this shame start? If we were going to talk to little Kevin right now, what would his memory be? Or was it just always there? Where did the bed of it start, the root of it?
I guess that's my first answer is no, I'm not going to talk to you about that. No. But I want to try because you're asking me and I think I can trust you a little.
You can.
Because, you know, I was really little, right? I mean, I was really little because even when I was molested, that was kind of real bad, right? Somebody molested me. I was only 9 years old, you know? And when I started drinking and using drugs, I was like 11 years old. That was really young. And that was really, really hard. And some people would say to me, why are you doing that? Why are you acting that way? Why are you stealing? Why are you doing drinking and drugging? And why are you spending all that time with those bad boys? And why are you doing these things? And why are you staying out all night? Why are you bad? Why are you bad? I just got bad. matter, I guess. But I didn't know who to trust. Yeah, I didn't know who to trust. And I didn't know, and I don't know how to say this, but I didn't know that the things that I was doing was because I didn't feel good inside. Because I didn't feel right about me. And I didn't feel right about you. And I didn't feel right about what other people were doing to me. And I didn't feel right about all the ways that I was using drugs, or alcohol, or stealing, or swearing all the time, or getting in trouble in school. I didn't know why I was doing that. So you'd say, why are you doing that? And I'm like, because I don't feel good inside. And you would ask me the question, do you remember, like, maybe if you're listening, you can understand the adults in my life, my parents, my adoptive parents and other people, they would say, is this because you're adopted? But they wouldn't really say that, would they? They would say, this isn't because you're adopted, is it? Okay. And I'd say, no, I'm fine with that. I'm okay. Because you know we love you, right? And I'd say, yeah, I know. Then why are you behaving this way? I don't know. And you have to stop. Okay. But I couldn't stop. And so I felt badder and badder. That's a word you use, like shame. I don't know that word, but I felt badder and badder. And I put myself, in places where people did hurt me. More and more and more. And then I put myself in places where I could get more drugs and I could get more drinking, you know, to drink. Because as I did that, it just kind of numbed me. It made me feel like I didn't have to think about what I didn't want to think about. Because I don't want to think about how bad I felt. Because I thought I was just bad. And thought I was just bad and I was never going to be good and there was nothing I could do. So I just kept being bad until I didn't want to be here anymore. You know what I mean by I don't want to be here anymore? Until you just want to not be here ever again. And I don't know. I don't know how, but I'm still here. And I'm really glad I'm talking to you today.
Well, Kevin, I'm so glad you're talking to me too. And I wish I could show you Big Kevin right now because he is amazing. And he made it. And he's helping heal people that are hurting. And he couldn't have done that without you.
Thank you.
So Big Kevin, we have a big issue. Forgiveness. Ugh. I ain't gonna get all biblical, okay? But this is so hard. And I think one of the most difficult things that I'm coming to terms with is my anger, which I didn't know was anger, actually. It showed itself in resentment. I resented my birth mom for giving me up. I resented my adopted mom for not supporting my search. I just resented the whole thing and I was angry, but I couldn't show that anger. I just became a shell of myself in that process. And I think, you know, we can easily weave in loneliness and shame into forgiveness because it is so hard to forgive not only others, but ourselves. And I think, and I'd be curious to see what Big Kevin thinks. I feel like the more that I understand things, it allows a space for forgiveness. We had an anonymous birth mother who shared her story, and it literally softened my heart in a way that was so unexpected. And in that space, I was able to have a different view of my own birth mother, more compassion. And I don't think there's an easy way to forgive. I feel like it's a process. And I'm just really curious how Big Kevin has not only forgiven others, but himself?
It's a great question. And the pieces that are in place in my life, you're right, are extremely different than anything I could have, I guess, imagined or dreamt possible. I saw other people around me, Richard, my 12-step sponsor, and other people in my life that I really respect and love. And I'd see them and I'd say, wow, you look whole, whole. I can see there's substance to you and I don't feel whole. I feel many of us, I know I equate myself to a puzzle that's missing a lot of pieces, there's a real sense of, I can't be whole. I'm not going to put those pieces into place. And as someone who's adopted, as someone who didn't know his roots and still doesn't know so much and will never have those years back, I'll never have all those experiences that, will be missing and are absent from me mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Those pieces of the puzzle, as they say, they're not going to be replaced, but I'm not really good at puzzles, Heidi. I could sit down with a puzzle. My adoptive mom, she's 92 and lives with us. She's right underneath me right now. Say hi, Mom. And she lives with us and we care for her. And she does puzzles. She's probably doing one right now because I asked her to be quiet while we're doing this. But she's probably doing a puzzle. Once in a while, I'll go in and see how the puzzle's going and I'll look for a piece and put one piece in. And as I do something like that, I'll be like, that one piece will be like, okay, I'm done. Thank you. Success. Gone. But you know what I have found that I do like is a mystery. I do like mysteries. And I think I'm good at mysteries because there's clues. There's pieces that I can find an answer that's not the answer. It's not the answer that's going to, put the whole piece together, the whole puzzle together. It's a clue that's going to lead me to what? Another clue. Which is going to lead me to another clue. And I've learned that forgiveness has been that kind of a journey for me. And early on, and I know the same thing is for many of us, the idea of even being able to grapple with self-forgiveness or forgiveness of others seems sometimes like a waste of time, sometimes like a puzzle that somebody else should do. I'm not going to spend my time doing that. That's too much work. And I don't like puzzles anyway. But when I realized that I don't need to look at all these pieces and try to put the frame together and try to put the pieces and match the colors, I just need to look for one clue, one thing that's maybe going to give me a sense of understanding why I should even want forgiveness, self-forgiveness or forgiveness of others. So I think that's really been important to me. And I want to just express that in a way, hopefully that picture of the puzzle and the mystery makes sense to folks. But the idea is I can't want forgiveness until I want forgiveness. I can't accept forgiveness until I'm ready to accept forgiveness. And I can't forgive others until I'm ready. And it's okay is what I'm trying to say. It's okay not to be ready. It's okay to say, I'm not in a place where I can forgive. I'm like, no. I understand that. For years, I wasn't ready, willing, forget about able. So I need to work on those little clues that allow me to discover a little bit of why I might want to do this. And for me, a lot of it was understanding that the only thing that me having resentment is the word you used, the only person that was hurting was me. Now, that sounds simple enough, but what am I going to do with that? Okay, so I've got, lucky for me, or unlucky for me, I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic, so I've got a 12-step process, but there's therapy and there's a lot of different ways to grapple with resentments. There's a lot of different ways to process those pieces. I don't have the market cornered on any of that, but I certainly do understand that each path that we take individually seems to have some similarities. And one of the things that I find is that as we start to become more willing to forgive, or even if we're not willing, maybe we can be willing to be willing someday, right? Those little clues that lead us there. Once that little bit of willingness comes in, right? Then all of a sudden things start to change gradually, very slowly, subtly. Some of it's just intellectual. I start to understand, geez, this is a waste of my time. I'm only hurting myself. Yet I'll do it 14 times a day. but maybe a month from now, I'll do it 13 times a day. Maybe next year I'll be down to 10, right? And that's what I'm looking for. It's that what I call spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And I understand that intellectually, but boy, oh boy, when it finally started to come down into my heart again, it's all that heart stuff, all that emotional stuff. I'm like, geez, this hurts too darn much. Can't we just not do this at all? And yes, we can. I can not forgive, and I can not self-forgive, and I can not be willing. I can stop doing the work. And I have found that life doesn't just crumble to the ground, but it loses its color in some ways. It loses its vibrancy when I stay stuck in the non-forgiveness. We can use other words like resentment or anger or hurt, any of those things. But that sense of I'm not going to progress in these clues of finding a way to forgive, that is going to keep me in a place that, sure, I can stay there. I may be even able to function and have a family and have a whole life, but it's going to change the way the world around me looks. And here's the big key. When I do not progress in my forgiveness, when I do not progress in my self-forgiveness, it hinders and limits my effectiveness to others, my ability to be of service and to care for other people and to lift up other people and to give other people my experience, strength, and hope that hopefully we can do this together. I never thought that I could be in this place of what I say, fully able to forgive. I never thought I could do that. And when it came to me, it was like a master stroke. It was a revelation. But it didn't come overnight. It came over time. You said the phrase, let's not get biblical here. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you get biblical. It doesn't matter if you get biblical. It doesn't matter if you get psychological. It doesn't matter if you have a spiritual path or a non-spiritual path.
Get there any way you can.
you. The whole point is tomorrow I want to not be where I am today. And it may not even feel like I've made a move, like from today to tomorrow. It may not feel it tomorrow. I may even feel worse. But if I've grappled with it today, I can tell you, even if it feels worse, if I've grappled with it, if I've struggled with it, if I've thought about it, talked to somebody else, tried to work it out, I've changed. I may not see it yet. I may not know it. So my forgiveness is very specific. It has to do with understanding the value of forgiveness to me. I understand that when I work on forgiving my relinquishment, and that's what we're talking about here, and other things in my life, of course, perpetrators, people that have hurt me. When I work on those areas of my life, it not only heals me, it not only helps me, I not only get in a better place for myself, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and my life changes for the better, slowly but surely, I'm able to be of service to others in ways that I'm not going to say is better, but it's different than I'm able to if I do not walk through the forgiveness path. And the self-forgiveness is very similar to that. It's been one of the biggest struggles for me. Forgiving the relinquishment, forgiving the adoption experience, forgiving all those pieces that came into play around the primal wound has been torturous, at best, torturous. It's been my cross to bear until I realized it wasn't anymore. And then again, just like the chains of shame, the cross to bear, that's mine to pick up. Those struggles, once I've gone through them, I can pick them back up again, or I can keep them where they are. I've really processed that. And I think what's really important to me now is recognizing that self-forgiveness, while it's not about just me saying, oh, you're a good boy, Kevin, you're a good boy. It's not just about talking to little Kevin and saying it's okay. It's really about saying big Kevin's okay. Big Kevin has done the best he can. And big Kevin has value. Big Kevin has purpose. And mostly more than anything else, and I think you'll understand this, I can be of better service to little Kevin if I heal big Kevin. If I have self-forgiveness as big Kevin, and if I have self-forgiveness in my life now and my ability to forgive others, that makes me much more capable of nurturing what we call the child within. Understanding that little relinquished child is no longer a baby that can be abandoned. I cannot be left on the sidewalk to starve and die. I'm an adult now. and I can take care of me. And you can leave me. Heidi, you may never speak to me again after today. You may just abandon me, but it's not an abandonment because I can care for myself now. But if I'm not going to take the time to heal from that, if I'm not going to forgive myself and forgive others, what does that say about me? I'm worth it to me. I have the value that I think is so high now that it's worth it to go through it to forgive others. I am not forgiving them for them. I'm doing it for myself. I want to let them off the hook, not so they can walk free, so I can walk free. I want to let myself off the hook and self-forgive so I can be of service, not only to others, but to myself and to care for myself.
Yeah. Powerful, powerful, Kevin. And, you know, I think about little Kevin, and I also think about myself as when I was younger, it felt like forgiveness was so fluid. And in, at least in my case, you know, something would happen. I just kind of let it like wind just blow through me. It didn't stick to me. It didn't consume me. It didn't darken me, even though I was going through difficult things. And I just remember the older I got, the heavier it got and the nastier it got and the harder grip it had on my heart. And I just wonder if little Kevin had that same experience where a bad thing would happen, but you would, it's kind of like a dog getting kicked would come back for a pet. You know, I just don't know. What was your experience as little Kevin with forgiveness? And when did it become like a really difficult concept?
Everybody hurt me. Almost everybody that I knew was not out to get me, not wanting me to fall on my face and scratch my nose or something like that. But I felt like every time I rode my bike, somebody was going to push me off, you know? And every time I fell down, I felt like nobody was going to be there to pick me up, you know? Like if I fell down, people were going to laugh at me and say, well, you fell down because you're no good. You deserve to fall down. You deserve to be hurt. And that's what it felt like. And I know that my mommy and my daddy, my adoptive mom and dad, you know, they weren't mean people. They did take care of me. They did pick me up and help me. But there was something about me that didn't feel right. There's something about me that felt sad and broken and scared. But I didn't know that I needed to feel better. I didn't know that. I didn't know that I needed to feel better. I knew that I didn't want to feel bad though, you know? And I think that when I tried to feel better, it was doing bad things a lot. And I think that the drugs, the alcohol, the all the bad things that I did, and even the things that I did that hurt me, I did it so that I didn't have to feel the bad. I didn't want to feel the bad. Kind of like when I talked about feeling numb, like numb, but it's like everywhere numb. It's like everywhere. It's not just your skin, you know, it's not just your brain. It's not up here. It's not just like your heart, like when your chest feels tight and you feel like your tummy, you want to get sick or something and you want that to go away. It's not that, it's all that, but it's something else too. It's like you just don't want to belong. You don't want to be here. You don't want to feel anything. And I think that the most important part to me happened not when I was little, because I didn't know what to do. And I don't think anybody else knew how to help me. Way back then, I was told that, you know, this was like when my mommy who carried me in her tummy, you know, she couldn't take care of me. And this was a long, long time ago. And I was born in 1962. So that's a long time ago now. And I think that the people that took care of me and my family and the people that were part of that adoption place and everything, they didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to tell me. They didn't know what to tell each other. And I don't think I got the help that I needed when I was little. I get that. I understand that. But I think that I did finally get the help I needed. I was in Brooklyn long time ago. Big Kevin sat on the couch. Big Kevin sat on the couch and asked me to sit down next to him. And when I came and sat there, I felt really scared. I felt really scared because I knew we were going to talk about all the bad things. But he didn't yell at me. He didn't yell at me. Big Kevin didn't yell at me, and I didn't know what to do. And I was crying, and I was scared, and I was sad. And then Big Kevin said he was sorry. Big Kevin said, "I'm sorry. I couldn't take better care of you. I'm sorry." And he said, "I'm really sorry that I wasn't able to do that. And I'm sorry I let those people hurt you." And he said, "I'm really sorry that I put all those drugs into you and I couldn't stop. And I'm really sorry that your mommy left you and I couldn't get her back. And I promise you," he said this, he said this, he says, "I promise you, I'll never let anybody hurt you again." He said that, Heidi, he said that to me. And, you know, I don't know why, but it was important. And I believed him. I believed Big Kevin. And then Big Kevin said, "So we're going to do this together now, okay?" And I said, "Really?" I said, "But I'm so little, I can't do nothing." He said, "But Kevin, you already did it all." And I looked at Big Kevin. I said, "What did I do?" He says, "I'm here because you survived. You did it already." And I realized I'm strong, right? I'm strong. And it wasn't my fault. And I'm not bad. And I do belong here. Mm-hmm. And now Big Kevin and me, little Kevin, Big Kevin and little Kevin are right here with you today. Because that's where I want to be. I don't want to be without Big Kevin anymore. And what's really nice is Big Kevin really likes me and doesn't want to be around without me either.
That's amazing. That was incredible, Kevin. So are you up for the big finale? So Big Kevin, we have a lot of people out there, a lot of adoptees who are hurting. The child in them has not been acknowledged. The pain has not been acknowledged. The suffering is so large. And I just wonder what Big Kevin would say to those aching souls that are longing for some kind of hope and comfort, reassurance, guidance. What would Big Kevin like to say to them?
Hi, everybody. You know, you've been listening for a bit, maybe watching, and you've watched me look here. You've watched me look here. I want to look right here. I can say that I don't know what'll help. I don't. I just don't have the answers for you. I don't know if you watching this is going to change one little iota of how you feel or where you're trying to go or healing where you've been. I hope so, though. I hope that when I reach out to other people and that I share like this and that I talk to you and that I look you right in the eye like I'm trying to right now, that something happens for you. But I can promise you one thing, and this is it. It's everything that I can promise, because I can only promise you what I know for me. You're helping me. You're healing me right now. Us doing this together me, you, Heidi, we're not alone anymore, are we? We don't have to do this by ourselves. I can't promise you that you're going to feel better. I can't. But I promise you that I feel better. And I hope that gives you a little bit of hope. I hope that gives you maybe a little bit of courage. Because you know what courage is, especially for us? It's not when we have pure faith that everything's going to be okay. Because I got a lot of faith, probably a mustard seed, but I got a lot. And it's not because fear goes away, because I'm afraid almost every day. And I know how that feels, and you probably do too. But the difference is that we got the fear, and maybe together we got this faith, and together we can make a step forward. And that's courage. That's courage. So I got to be honest with you. I can't tell you where you're at right now, but I can tell you where I think you're at. If you listen to this, you want to move forward. If you're watching this and you're thinking, geez, I can never be where Heidi is. I can never be where Kevin is. I can't do this. But you're asking that question. Can I? You've already made the leap. And it may not be a leap that's going to fix everything today, tomorrow, maybe even a year from now. But I can promise you, for me, I believe that you now have hope, even that little piece. And together we'll do this. I don't know if you'll need to do a visualization and go to your little child. I don't know if you'll need to go to therapy. I don't know if you'll need to write and write and write in a journal or a book or a story, or just take a long walk with nature. But the finding of those clues along the way of what's going to work for you, that's the journey that I hope you'll take. That's the journey I hope you want to be on. Because if it's just about fixing everything, it's just about taking a pill, it's just about getting the right answers, I got nothing. I've never found that. If you do, let us all know. I'm sure the world wants it. But if you're interested in the one step at a time, the one piece at a time, I think we can do that. I think we can do that. We can do that in this community. I'm so grateful for you listening, being here today, and watching if you're watching. This has been really special to me, and I just want to say how grateful I am.
Kevin, we're so grateful to you. And as we end this, I just want to talk to little Kevin one more time. And I'm hoping little Kevin can use his imagination and just imagine a beautiful stage, just somewhere glorious in the world. And all of these child adoptees, the child in us has come, and all of these children are together. And they're looking at you. And they're opening their minds and their hearts and their souls to some kind of hope. And there you are standing looking at them. What would little Kevin say to the little child inside of the adoptee?
Some people say life's like a merry-go-round. I think it's more like a Ferris wheel. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. Sometimes you just don't know what to feel. And just when you think you've got it all figured out and you say you've had enough, the mysterious madman with his hand on the lever don't seem to never, ever want to let you off. Let's sing together, guys. Sing together. Me and you at the top of our lungs. Let's do this holding hands. Whole world is watching us. And we can believe we got this. We got this. We're going to be okay because we got each other. can't get off this wheel of karma. You can't stop the hands of time. You can't get off this wheel of karma. You can't stop the hands of time. Let's not stop, guys. Let's not stop, okay? Let's do it together. Let's do it together. Thank you.
I don't know how to adequately respond to that, Kevin. It just exceeded anything I imagined. That was incredible.
What was your idea?
I'll take a little tiny bit of credit. You know what? I'm smart enough to know when I'm not smart enough. How's that?
You're like
that's
my,
a gift.
You're
that's
like
a
my,
gift. I'm like, I can't do it, but that person can.
You're like my son, Tyler. He says, I'm smart enough to know I can't do everything.
Right. Kevin, that was just, I don't know how you felt doing it, but it just felt so authentic. It was just everything I had hoped for and more. And I think what excites me, like makes every cell in my body vibrate, is I do believe that this is going to be something, not a novelty, but it's going to allow people to feel something in a different way. And that really excites me, because I think sometimes we listen and hear, but we need to move it here. And I think your willingness to do that, because I know that's pouring a lot of yourself into something. You know, I can feel it.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, and you do with it as you want. I recorded all of this.
Oh yeah, yes, you did, Kevin. I love you so much. Stop it. That's brilliant.